Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting for Wednesday, October 9th. Call the meeting to order, and Ms. Cassiola, would you please do the roll call?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Austin?
Here.
Vice President Joyce Sunnison?
Here.
And President Barney?
Here. Please join us in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any comments on agenda review?
Nope.
No.
Okay, seeing none. We'll go to a closed session report from a special meeting at from September 20th at 9:45 a.m. and September 23rd.
We did have a closed session today, President Barney, but we have no reportable action required by the Brown Act.
Thank you. The purpose of the board meeting is to conduct the business of the community in an effective and efficient manner. For the benefit of the community, the OCSD asks that you follow the board meeting guidelines while attending board meetings and treat everyone with respect and dignity. This is done by following meeting guidelines set forth in state law and board policy, and disruptive behavior is not tolerated, including but not limited to addressing the board without first being recognized, interrupting speakers, board members or staff, continuing to speak after the allotted time has expired, or failing to relinquish the podium when directed to do so, and repetitiously addressing the same subject. And we appreciate your cooperation with these. We'll open the meeting now to public comment on items not on the agenda. I don't have any speaker slips, but we may have speakers who, members of the public who would like to speak. So if you do have something you want to share for matters not on the agenda, please come forward now. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and go to special presentations and reports, beginning with our South County Sheriff's Station Commander, Ian Dowdy. Mr. Dowdy.
Good evening, Board. I present the statistics we have for Oceano for September. We had 339 calls for service during that month, which is a slight decrease from last year where we had 385. We had 6 reports of assault or battery, which were domestic violence, 41 reports of disturbance. We did not have any burglaries, 2 reports of petty theft, 2 of vandalism. We did not have any mail theft. We had 36 instances where our deputies assisted other agencies, 6 calls for suspicious circumstances, 53 enforcement stops, which would be traffic or pedestrian, 14 arrests, and we did not have any Narcan use. Overall for September, no really specific trends or crimes that we saw, at least in the Oceano area or the greater South County area. The only other thing I have to present is we received these from County OES Ready Slow. I can leave them here. They're extra pamphlets for emphasizing knowing your zone in the event of an evacuation or emergency. They're disseminating these out in different community meetings throughout the county. So I can leave these here. It's good information. I know our specific instance down here is probably going to be more flood potential, but it's still good information to know as far as zones and how to react in any sort of evacuation order or warning.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commander.
I
was just going to ask if there's any questions from directors.
Yeah, I'm just curious. When you say disturbance, is that like a loud argument or?
It could be. So the way it generates within our dispatch call is a disturbance of the peace. And so that could be, and that's going to be incumbent on how that caller calls it in. So if it's You know, it could be loud. We get those calls for loud talking. We also get those calls for there's a fight down the street. So it really covers a broad spectrum.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any questions from members of the public for the commander? This is your chance. Looks like you're free to go out and continue patrol, Commander.
Thank you so much.
Next up is Five Cities Fire Authority Operations. Chief Hallett is not present this evening. So we'll move on to Operations, our Utility System Manager, Mr. Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 43.8% full, which is 46,419 acre feet. We had zero sewer system.
93%?
Correct. It's 93.8% full. We had zero sewer system overflows in the month of September, and we got delivered just over 58 acre feet of Lopez water, and we did not pump any water last month. We are still continuing to do our daily rounds, our weekly and monthly samples. We had 10 work orders, 19 USAs, 11 customer service calls. We had one after-hours call-out, and that was at the 1400 block of 16th Street. The irrigation was running all day at this resident, and there was nobody there at the house. The neighbors called it in at about 11 p.m. at night. The on-call operator went and shut off their water with a customer shut-off valve and left a door hanger on there. So it stopped flooding the street. We did surplus our backhoe and air compressor on the government website, and they have been picked up. After meter reads, we had re-reads for high-low consumption and leak notifications to residents that had potential leaks. Once the meter reads were complete, we also had our common coats we completed. That was two raised meter boxes to concrete them in, also replace meters as needed. And trim the vegetation around the meters that we read. It, you know, we got to keep the area clean, make it easier for us to read meters. We're continuing to pick up trash, plus we had 5 311 tickets for the month of September. We are back now focusing on sewer jetting our system. First of the month equipment runs. We also had an employee attend a class at Napomo CSD for the new requirements regarding cross-connection and backflows that go into effect July of 2025. Yeah, the old fire station where AE rents out the building, we had a sink back up and we had to disassemble it and unclog it at the old fire station. We had to clear out a few manholes prior to sewer cleaning over there off of Strand due to quite a bit of sand buildup. So now we can access the areas over there off of Strand. There was only two locations. One was on Sandpiper. Another one was on Jetty. Our natural gas Waukesha booster failed during first of the month equipment startups. So we got that repaired back in service. And one more thing, State Water is going to be shutting down for maintenance. So that will happen here in about a week. And then it will solely be relying on Lopez. What that means to the residents is the water hardness is going to get a little harder. And they're going to go to free chlorine. So there might be some residents that will smell chlorine a little bit more than usual, who are more sensitive. Other than that, any questions?
Do we ever get calls when that smell, when the chlorine smell?
We do. And we'll go out there to the resident, talk with them, and also, if they like, we do pull a sample and show them what the residual is. Usually we need about two parts. Some people are more sensitive, can smell it in their drinking water. The water is going to get a little harder, and the water quality, you might smell it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to make everybody aware of that. There will be a press release that the county will put out.
And if it could be on Facebook, too, or next door, because people might see it there.
Yeah. And with that press release, we could also put that on our website as soon as the county posts it, just for information.
Sarah.
April came in and started.
Okay, so we'll just please have order in the room. Any questions? Other questions for Mr. Maricino?
No, but thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, our general manager, Mr. Brown, your report.
Thank you, President Varney. Number of items here I wanted to update the board on. Staff is working with the California Rural Water Association to evaluate grant eligibility for redesign and upgrades to our sewer lift station, and we have a field meeting with the Rural Water Association staff later this month. We're also continuing to work with Canon Engineering to complete our preliminary engineering report and move our water CIP projects toward 90% design. This is going to help our chances of grant success for both USDA grants as well as the Clean Water State Revolving Fund grants, which we anticipate applying for by the end of the year. I continue to meet regularly with partners to move the Halcyon and Kenmore Gardens consolidation plans forward, including AB 52 Native American consultation, and we have letters going out to the tribes this week on that front. On September 20th, President Varney and I attended a tour of the South County Sanitation District wastewater treatment plant and took a view of the redundancy project, and the board will hear more about that later on in tonight's agenda item 9A. Staff has been working on maximizing both our flexibility, liquidity, and return of investment for our reserve funds, and so that's moving in a positive direction. On October 2nd, I participated in an NCMA review committee of proposals required for our annual reporting for our groundwater basin and to help make recommendations for a new contract for services, which is up. And so I think the NCMA partners are willing to move forward and recommend, and if the board needs to take action on that contract, it'll come at a future meeting. I've assisted One Cool Earth in developing an educational flyer for our stormwater recharge basin. This has been posted on our website. We have handouts here, but it is a really nice one-page flyer that really talks about the multiple benefits for the community that relate to groundwater recharge, pulling stormwater out of the overflow of the areas of the curbs, gutters, and sidewalks, and you know, reducing INI in our sewer system. So all kinds of great benefits highlighted in this flyer. And then the last thing that I wanted to point out to the board, which also may come forward at a forward meeting, is that we're evaluating low-cost modular offices for utility yard staff so that they can have some improved working conditions at the corporation yard. Mm-hmm. So we'll bring that forward as well in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Are there any questions from directors?
No, that's just great news.
Okay. Then we'll go to reports from directors on outside committees. Director Villa's not here this evening. Director Gibson?
Nothing to report.
Director Austin?
I'll let Mr. Gant is here from the Sanitation District, so I'll defer my report to him when he gives his.
Okay. All right. Fine. Vice President Senison?
No, nothing to report.
Okay. I had a busy month, and I'll just do brief reports on I attended SLOCOG's quarterly rideshare program meeting where we were brought up to date on the current status of active transportation program grants, and Stephen Hamamaikai reviewed the $5 million grant that they have written for Oceano to expand bike corridors, additional sidewalks around Oceano Elementary School, safer intersections, and so that was really nice to hear that, and appreciate that the county organizations are really listening to our community and walking their talk. I attended the Safe Routes to School committee meeting at Oceano Elementary School, where there were a lot of nice awards that came up. The school got a national bicycling business award, only one of three schools in the United States to get that, and had a big walk to school event yesterday where over 100 kids participated in that. Then last week in the evening, I attended SLOCOG's annual Road to Zero conference, which is has a lot of different agencies and organizations represented. And the goal there is to, the road to zero is zero fatalities from transportation activities in the county. And it was, it's always a great place to network, and I connected with the Office of Transportation Safety from the State Department of Transportation, talked a little bit about the challenges that we face here in the community, and was told that I would be put on a list of any grants that became available that looked like they would be a good fit for our community. Let's see, was it? Two nights ago, Monday night, the Oceano Elementary School PTA met, and we got some great news about the track and field project. That's the, I think most of you know about it. This is a project to build a track and soccer field at Oceano Elementary School that's going to be available for the community when school's not in session, and of course available to the school when school's in session. Jim DiCecco, every morning as kids come to school, about 80% of them go out and walk around the grass field. That's how they start the day. And if this project is successful, if the community steps up and helps us with the fundraising, then the kids are gonna have a track to walk on, which is gonna be wonderful. The great news that came up that was new was that the PTA president is connected to people who are connected to construction in local construction companies, and Papich Construction, Cal Portland Construction, Toast Construction, and others have stepped up and said they want to participate in the project, the track and field project at Oceano Elementary School. And as soon as we have our plans in a state where they can look at and see what we need, they want to come in and see what they can do for us and help us out with materials, with donating some construction. So just looks like it's all, you know, going to be coming together. I think that I think I announced last month that I was approached by what I'm just calling Oceano Angel, that was very excited about the track project and pledged $25,000 to the project. The condition was that the community meet that $25,000, match it, and over at the school, there is, they have lined up they have a proposal from an engineer to do the design and engineering work for the track and field. Right now, the $25,000 grant that the district got, that OCSD got from the county community development block grants, the preventative health grant, that check is a little slow getting to the county, and the county's ready to sign off on the contract for the design and engineering. So I talked with the person who is the donor of the $25,000, explained to them the situation. And so I have a check for $25,000 that I'm delivering to the school district tomorrow, so they'll be able to sign that contract and literally kick off the job. That's my report.
Congratulations on that. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see people helping.
Thank you. Well, it's going to be a wonderful addition to our community, that's for sure, to have a walking track and a soccer field on our side of Highway 1. Okay, so that finishes that up. We'll take public comment on special presentations and reports. Anybody in the audience who wants to comment on any of the staff reports or director reports, this is your time to come forward.
I Julie Tacker, and I have a quick question related to the plaza. And I noticed the trees. It's lovely. I was wondering if you know what the water bill is over there, just because we need to factor that into any long-range maintenance or operations of it. But I'm curious if somebody knows that number.
I'm sure Mr. Brown has been tracking that.
I do not have the water bill memorized for that particular location. I do know that part of the contract included the construction company picking up the water bill for the first year during their warranty period. But we can certainly analyze that as it comes in. I think it's pretty minimal. It's all on time, drip irrigation. But we can bring numbers back if the board is interested.
Okay. Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and move on to the consent agenda. Again, we'll open public comment for any items on the consent agenda on the second page of your agenda. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Is there any discussion from the board? Seeing none, we'll look for a motion to approve the consent agenda as distributed.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Ms. Cassiola?
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sunnison?
Yes.
And President Varney?
Yes. Okay, now we'll move on to the nuts and bolts of the meeting, to our business items. Just for review, typically how we move forward on this is we have staff report, then we'll have questions from the directors for clarification of the staff report, then we take public comment, and then we bring it back to the directors for discussion and or action. And tonight, we have a special guest with us for item 9A, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Brown for introductions there. Pardon me.
Thank you, President Varney, members of the board, and members of the community. So item 9A is an information update on the existing OCSD sewer system, as well as the South San Francisco County Sanitation District Redundancy Project. And I think this was a request from the board to kind of learn more about the San District's largest ever capital improvement project. And really, this was an opportunity for me as your new general manager to really dive in and look at our sewer system, what our rates have been. We're in the middle, later item, we're going to talk about a potential sanitary sewer capital improvement plan. So a lot of this business tonight really looks at our sewer system, which is a fine functioning system. We have a great record of performance in terms of low numbers of SSO, sanitary sewer overflows. I think we've only had a couple in the last decade or so, which is pretty unusual. We also happen to have, of the three collection and conveyance systems, we're one of three systems, Grover Beach and AG, Rio Grande being the other. We collect and convey effluent and distribute it to the sanitary treatment plant for treatment. And so what we did in the staff report is we kind of looked at the two systems, the first being, under your provision, the collection and conveyance system. We have about 16 miles of gravity pipes ranging in size from 6 to 12 inches in diameter. We have one lift station in Force Main. That lift station, we believe, needs some attention in the near term in terms of redesign and reconstruction. And we also took a look in the staff report how much capital investments we've been making in our system, which actually has been pretty low over the last decade. And what I did for the board and the community is just kind of outlined the fact that the last sewer rate study we did was 14 years ago in 2010. I actually included a copy of that Prop 218 hearing in there. And basically, you know, one thing that's been good for Oceano residents has been the fact that their sanitary costs have been relatively low. And we also with the help of Mr. Gent, included a somewhat dated table, but relatively speaking, that table shows monthly single-family residential sewer rate costs across multiple jurisdictions. And while some of the jurisdictions have increased their rates, the fact remains the same that this area of South County is one of the lower cost agencies for sanitary services, and that's been a big benefit for everyone in the community. The flip side of that is we have underinvested in our system, and we are going to need to do some investments. The one thing about sewer system investments is they're mostly underground, they're mostly expensive, and you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But we do end up with hundreds of thousands of dollars in multi-million dollar investments that we anticipate needing in the next 2 to 8 years. So there are some big ticket items coming our way. And we'll know more about those when we complete our sewer CIP project, which is a later item. The second part of the staff report, and you mentioned a special guest, we do have the district administrator, Mr. Gent, who runs the sewer treatment plant. And I'm asking him to come up to the mic. He's prepared a presentation for us where he's going to kind of go over, I think, some basic district operations and really kind of dive into some of the details of the large CIP, the redundancy project that's ongoing there. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Gent now.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, the district administrator for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And I'd like to thank Peter and your board for the invitation tonight. It's been a while since I've been in front of your board for any notable item. And it used to be years ago, you could find out a little bit about the sanitation district by just opening your newspaper and seeing what was on the headlines. And luckily, things have quieted down a little bit, and we've got a lot of work in front of us, and we've been working on delivering that. A little bit of background about me. Prior to coming to the sanitation district in 2018, it's hard to believe it's been 6.5 years ago now, I worked for the County Public Works Department for the County of San Luis Obispo. I did start up on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Plant, and that was really the experience that drove me as an engineer to pursue this large infrastructure project. The sanitation district had the redundancy project in front of it, was looking for a new general manager, and I knew it was the type of project that I'd delivered many times in my career. And so on the project side, I felt confident. I was a little bit nervous about the environment just in the media and the political environment surrounding the scrutiny that was going on at the sanitation district in 2018. And I'll mention it, but I'm not going to talk about it tonight, and we don't have to talk about some of the past controversies that we've had, but it is important to note that we do at times have challenges, and these things ebb and flow. I have an outline here, and I'll apologize. I had set my slides up for the wide format, and so when they got reformatted for the OCSD computer, it looks like they went down to the 4x3 format, and some of the font size got reduced. But just want to run you through what I'm going to talk about real quick so you can know when to pay attention or cue into what you might be interested in. So I'll start with a brief history of just kind of what created the sanitation district and how it became in existence, and what is a sanitation district in general, and then who runs and works at it, where we're located, what all do we manage and operate, what's our annual budget, and what's our monthly rate to a single-family residence. I'll run through some of those past challenges and controversies, and then I'll get into the redundancy project. As Peter alluded to, it's a $39 million project, the largest capital improvement project that the district's ever undertaken. And then I'll talk about, for those of you that haven't followed, during construction, we've been in construction for 3 years now with a redundancy project. We identified a design failure last year, and the repair work for that design failure is well underway, and completion of that will happen in December. Some risks to the site. The site, we're located down near the airport, so we're adjacent to Meadow Creek Lagoon and the AG Creek Channel, so we have some constraints there on the site and some exposure to flood events during excessive rainfall. And then some current notable efforts that the district is undertaking that isn't to do with the redundancy project. Next slide, please. Thanks. So quick history. I'm going to read real fast, and I wanted to warn you about that. like, I don't normally read slides. I normally just ad lib, but I've talked about this stuff so much recently that I feel like I would leave gaps because I'm used to an audience that's somewhat informed. And so the history of the district, back in 1958, Grover City used to be Grover City before it became Grover Beach. Their water department commissioned an engineering study to investigate the rising nitrate levels observed in local groundwater resources. At the time, Grover City and nearby Oceana were entirely unsewered. That means they were on septic tanks. And Arroyo Grande was sewered with a system leading to a treatment plant, and they did a spray field and applied it to agriculture. As a result, the County Board of Supervisors formed the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. That's under California Government Code. We're a special district. It's unlike Five Cities Fire Authority, which was a joint powers authority. And it's an important distinguish because we have a separate board of supervisors or a separate board of directors, and it's a separate government entity. We're not ran by a committee. We're ran by a three-member board. Once construction was completed, we had 9 miles of trunk sewer line and the new wastewater treatment plant with an ocean outfall. Next slide, Gary. So a sanitation district is considered a special district under County Health and Safety Code. Like I said, our board is membered of the mayor of Arroyo Grande, the mayor of Grover Beach, and the director of the OCSD, or an officially appointed delegate from said governing bodies. So that's what we're made up of. Next slide. And so here's everybody that works over at the sanitation district right now. So our board of directors are... you're all familiar with Linda Austin, and then Karen Ray Russum's the mayor of Arroyo Grande, and Karen Bright is the current mayor of Grover Beach. And then going down from there, we have district legal counsel. We contract with Jones Mayor. So we have Keith Collins and Wendy Stockton for Jones Mayor representing the district for legal matters. And then me, I'm Jeremy Gent, I'm the district administrator. And then Amy Simpson's our bookkeeper and secretary. Michael Jones is our plant superintendent. Shift supervisor Mike Arias, senior operator Rick Jackman. We have 4 plant operators, Billy Romhild, Mario De Leon, Chris Rigoni, and Justin Music. 2 temporary plant operators, and I'll tell you a little bit about them later. And that's Everardo Vargas and Robert Grajeda. And then on the lab side, we have a vacant lab director position that we're advertising for right now. That's posted and on the street. And then our lab technician is our award-winning lab technician. Lab person of the year for ELAB California is Erica Frost, our lab technician. And next slide, Carrie. So where are we located? Like I said, I think most of the people in this room probably know where we're located because you're here in Oceano. But we're down between the AG Creek Channel along the levee and sandwiched between the Oceano Airport and the Meadow Creek Lagoon. It's kind of that Maui Circle, Aloha Court area that a lot of people are familiar with down there. We're about a 9-acre site. Next slide. What do we currently manage and operate? So today we use a fixed film reactor for secondary treatment with a design capacity flow rate of 5 million gallons per day. We're doing about 2.4 million gallons a day on an average dry weather flow day. And then the plant can handle and meet treatment at a full peak wet weather flow of 10 MGD during wet weather when we have high inflow into the system. We maintain and operate 9 miles of trunk main, and those are larger sewer lines that are from 30 to 15 inches. And then we have 155 manholes, and we also share operation of a 5,000-foot-long ocean outfall that goes directly off the coast just south of Pier Avenue and lands about 90 feet deep in the ocean, 5,000 feet offshore, and that's where the effluent from the sanitation district and Pismo Beach City wastewater treatment plant is discharged. Next slide. So this one, I apologize, it is too small. There's a screen capture of our consolidated budget for this year. It's an unusual budget because of the redundancy project and the millions of dollars that are pushing through there. Typically, we operate on about $6.5 million a year. Operations, about 4.2 of that. And then the rest of that is for capital projects and some debt service that we have.
And just by comparison, just Jeremy, thank you for that. Our budget is in the $5 million range on an annual operating, so very similar in terms of size and scope as the districts.
Yeah, good point, Peter. And then there in the orange text, so monthly costs for just treatment at the sanitation district currently is $25.48 a month for a single family residence. Next slide. Here's the graphic that Peter referred to earlier. I did grab it. It's from a rate study that I worked on in 2018 for the district. It is dated, but it's a fair amount of effort to get all these gathered, and I didn't have time to update it. But it is still largely representative, and why it's important is we are afforded some of the lowest wastewater service charges in the county. You can see the lower charge there is actually in Santa Barbara County and Santa Maria. Some of these locations have actually done fairly big expansions and have gone up. I will say that our rates haven't really gone up from this graphic and are still representative of the rates here locally. Next slide. Some past challenges and controversies. And so I will be taking questions later, but I'll ask not to take questions on this particular slide. So these are past challenges and controversy. They predate my, but it is important for us to remember this history because as board changes and the staff changes, where we've been and the things we've gone through, we need to be mindful of. So probably one of the bigger events that some people are familiar with that in December of 2010, the district had some equipment failures during a flood event, and so some of the redundant protections that were supposed to be in place did not function. And that led to a very large spill, manholes in the community were bubbling out, mixed stormwater and wastewater, and it ultimately led to a fine of a little over $1 million from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. The district contested that for a while and ultimately did not prevail in any meaningful way. The only thing they prevailed on was getting some of the money repurposed here locally to be used for local benefit. But other than that, the fine was paid by the sanitation district. The Knutson report, there was an investigation into former administrator John Wallace. There was which led to the next item, the misdemeanor conflict of interest, where he was found guilty of and pleaded no contest to self-dealing. Then a couple years later, there was some controversy that ultimately led to the leaving of the plant superintendent and the termination of the district administrator. That led to some severance packages, costs that the district had to bear. We had a censure of a board member. There was information getting out that wasn't allowed to be released, and so there was actions taken to, and these aren't things that I want to dwell on, like I think I've made that point, but all that led to continuous and excessive legal costs to the district that were running $300,000 a year, and I will say now we're more $30,000 to $40,000 a year on legal fees, even though we're delivering the largest capital improvement project the district's ever delivered. Next slide, please. So that project, and here I'm going to read a little bit again because this is a project I talk about all the time, and I'll certainly skip some stuff if I just tried to ad lib. So the district has been working on the development of the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project since our 1986 wastewater. We have passed that up. It is the largest now, so that phrase is a little dated. What we're adding is two activated sludge aeration basins, one new secondary clarifier, a new fixed film reactor and effluent and primary effluent pump station, waste activated sludge thickener, blower building, electrical and motor control center, yard piping, site improvements, instrumentation and controls, electrical systems, flood proofing of critical plant systems. And I'll pause on that. So the flood proofing, that was a coastal condition, and it kind of ties back to the 2010 event. The district has made substantial investments, and the ratepayers have made substantial investments at the site to flood proof the existing infrastructure so that when we do have flood events, that the major components continue to operate and that anything that was taken offline can come back online immediately when floodwaters recede. And so that's been substantial, and it's paid off, and we saw that in these 23 and 22 record high rainfalls. I'm proud to say that the sanitation district did not have a single sanitary sewer overflow or damage from any of those rain events. And why that's important is we are a compromised site. We are subject to flooding. But multiple other wastewater agencies in the county experience floods during those events, because some of it's just capacity and the ability to handle I&I. Some of it is floodwaters on the Salinas came up and took out Templeton's and Paso's basins that they had down. So there were substantial spills during this past winter. And so I'd like everyone to know that the district performed really well. And I'm not saying we always will, but we have invested and we take precautions to avoid those type of damages. Then we also rehabbed our existing secondary clarifier as part of the project and added a new generator to provide backup power for all the new equipment. Next slide, please. So the project design failure, that's one of the topics that I think President Varney wanted to hear more about, and your board wanted to hear about how this was being handled. So back in July of 23, the contractor was draining our newly constructed secondary clarifier. And when they returned over the weekend, the equipment wasn't working, and there was the tank should have been empty, but it was still holding water. And when they completed draining the tank, they found a crack in the floor, which obviously shouldn't have been there. And so we were very close to starting up the new plant. Project was almost completed, and this goes back a little over a year ago now, 14 months ago that this happened. And so we had to start an investigation, figure out what the cause of the crack was. Was it a construction defect, something that the contractor did? Was it something in the design that was an error? Or was it a site condition that nobody knew about? And the team investigate. It was a design flaw. It became very clear that there were errors in the structural calculations that were provided. And so the engineer, the designer, has accepted responsibility, and we're working with their insurance carrier to fund the repair from this failure. So the current status, the repair work is well underway. All of the demolition work of the stuff that needed to be removed has been completed. We added these micropile anchors that have been installed. They go 66 feet into the ground, and that's to help anchor the floor of the tank to the ground. And then over the next couple of weeks, we'll be pouring the new concrete floor. It was a 10-inch thick slab. It's going to be a 16-inch slab. And then 12/30, that's not just the year-end date. That's the contractor's actual schedule for completion, and that does appear to be accurate at this point. No indication that they'll miss that. And then at that point, the sanitation district takes over, and we have this newly constructed redundant plant, and we start the biological process, and we have to run that for 45 days, and we'll be in 24/7 operation for those 45 days, so we'll be working around the clock. Normally, we're one shift 5 days a week. Next slide, Gary. I'm almost done. Flood risks to site, coastal conditions, future relocation. So as I mentioned earlier, during extreme rain events, sanitation district site is susceptible to both lagoon and creek flooding. Climate change increases the frequency of this type of flooding. Sea level rise will create indirect impacts at the site. And what do I mean by indirect site? I just like to explain this sometimes. We are close to the coast. Sea level rise modeling, it's real, it's happening. But we're not in a future projected sea level rise. We're not going to be in the ocean. But what happens when you're next to the coast is that sea level comes up, your frequency of creek flooding and lagoon flooding goes up with that sea level rise. And so that goes back to the earlier susceptibility that I was talking about. So as part of the redundancy project, the Coastal Commission requires us to monitor flood impacts at the site, because they knew that they were permitting us to continue to operate and expand our facility in a compromised site. So one of the conditions they said is, hey, you need to be watching for these type of impacts and make good decisions on when would be appropriate to retreat if these flood impacts became too disruptive or too environmentally damaging. That coastal permit requires 10-year check-ins. We got that permit in 2017 to build the redundancy project. Our first major check-in is at 2027, and then again at 37 and 47. And those check-ins are really to show progress toward developing a plan to relocate the site when it's necessary. And it could be necessary before 2047, but I will say, to date, we've been monitoring since 2019, and it's 2024, so we've done 5 years of coastal monitoring, and there has not been a rain event that has led to damage that goes into a category that Coastal Commission is searching for any of these type of triggers for relocation. So our performance is helping us out at not having to relocate sooner rather than later. And our investments that the community has made in protecting the facility and in floodproofing the plant is working and allowing the plant to operate safely and through these rain events. So the other item, the plant was built, we were approved in 1963. Construction of the facility was completed in 1966. We do have life expectancy that we're up against too. On 2047, we're now like 85 years old at that point at the existing facility. And it does beg the decision, like, do you keep investing in a compromised site like that, or do you follow the plan that you've outlined in it on the timeline around 2047? You genuinely are looking at new sites for your wastewater treatment facility here in the five cities. With that, I think I'm close to the end. It might even be the last slide. Next slide, Kerry. Oh, current notable efforts. Last one. I mentioned a complete staff preparation for startup of the new plant process. We've got a small group, and we brought those two temporary workers that I mentioned earlier, Everardo Vargas and Robert Grajeda. And so they've been brought on to supplement our workforce as we go into 24/7 plant operations. We'll have two operators on site around the clock. And why this is necessary is these plants really are kind of like plants, like biological plants, and there's living bacteria. And so we have to grow this stuff, and the amount of monitoring and attention during that, when you put that seed in the ground, we even call it seed, we have to grow that, and it needs that attention to make sure that your seed doesn't die, because getting our seed into the tank is going to cost about $80,000, and so we don't want to kill it because we'd have to buy another seed. Then on that January 6th, we're scheduled to start that 24/7 operation and start up with a new process. And then a separate project that the district's pretty excited about. We've been all redundancy for the past 3.5 years, but we're developing a cogeneration system. It's a biogas. We generate waste methane at the plant. Currently, it's just flared, burnt, and sent off into the atmosphere. And we're working with a PG&E program that allows us to install a natural gas generator, and it will generate power that largely offsets our $18,000 a month electricity bill. Almost 90% of that bill will be gone from the power we'll generate, and then it will also provide all the heat for our digesters. We have these large anaerobic digesters that we heat to 96 degrees. It's similar to the human stomach, as the temperatures we're trying to mimic to get the digestion of the organics inside. And I forget where I was going with that. Oh, and so that we're able to offset all of our natural gas usage with the waste heat from the cogeneration system. So it'd be substantial savings that completely offset the project costs. And with that, the next slide will be questions.
Okay.
And I know that was a little bit long, but we've done a lot, and it's been a long time since I've been here, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you very much for that. And so we'll turn it back to directors for right now, and just remind you that this is just for questions, not comments or opinions at this point. For Mr. Gent, any questions for clarification on the presentation? Director Gibson.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember back, but wasn't there a plan to use the redundancy and trade off with the other plant so that you're
Yeah, so to answer, so the reason for the redundancy project, currently the way the plan operates is we refer to them as trains. There's just one train line that goes through the facility. So the water comes in, comes into the headworks, and then we have two primary clarifiers. That's the only redundant system we have is primary settling. And then from there, we go to our fixed film reactor. And so we only have one fixed film reactor. And so what Director Gibson is alluding to is we can't take that fixed film reactor offline. Because if we had to do major repairs to that, we wouldn't be able to continue to treat the water to its full standard before discharging it. So we would be discharging undertreated wastewater. And so that fixed film reactor has been in operation continuously since 1983. Has mechanical equipment that's rotating. So it's a risk. It's a risk of failure. It's a risk of a discharge of undertreated wastewater. The district does have some plans in place that would intercept that and try to mitigate some of that. But it's really, once redundancy construction is complete, we'll be able to completely remove that and do like a three-month rehab to that structure and then have fully redundant systems. And that was why the Regional Water Quality Control Board required this. Starting in 2005, they were going after agencies that did not have redundant processes because these were known since the 70s. They wouldn't let anybody build a new plant like that. But some of these legacy plants were still operating that way. And so in earnest, in 2015, the district started pursuing the redundancy project, and it ultimately didn't get to construction until 2021.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Director Austin?
I just have one little question about something that you said. People have come up here in public comment and stated that, you know, the sewer plant is always flooding the town and causing sewer backup. Well, that comes from the 2010. Now, that's the only time that happened, and it was caused from a rain event that caused the plant to malfunction, a part that caused this backup. But in all the 50, 60 years, there's never been, the plant is not flooding, causing the plant, it's not overflowing into the community.
Correct. So that 2010 event, the plant would handle that particular event fine today because of the modifications that have been made. So the 2010 level of event does not present the same exposure that it did in 2010. And I can get detailed about what happened there, but I think I did explain some of it to Director Varney and General Manager Brown. But there was important electrical equipment located in an area that was susceptible to taking water, even in reasonable conditions. And so that was part of an engineering design that was installed. And so that needed to be corrected. So when our headworks takes on excess water, most of that equipment is made to run underwater. But in that particular instance, there was electrical equipment that should be located out of the headworks, and it now is. Once it went underwater, the pump stopped working, and so it wasn't due to a power outage, which we have backup generators for. When the main pumps aren't working, there was no way to move it through, and there was actually another failure that we've mitigated, and we would be able to move all the water through with a diesel mechanical pump through the plant without any power or electrical systems in our current setup.
All right. I just have comments later, so that's okay. My only question.
Director Sutton, any questions? I just have a quick one, Mr. Gant. Let's say if we were starting over new, is generally the best management practice for a wastewater treatment plant to not be taking in storm water? In other words, the storm water that's coming down the gutters and goes down someplace, typically you want to keep it out of the sanitation district?
Yeah, because those flows fluctuate too much is the very primary reason that you can't take storm water flows, because they come in high. Now, the plant's not designed to take that. Every wastewater system in existence has what's called INI, inflow and infiltration. So whether it's from a manhole, somebody's broken clean out in their yard, sometimes like some of these low-lying areas, like down at Aloha Court, once those houses flood and go underwater, their floor drains are now like sending water to the sanitation district. So that's also inflow to the sanitation mm-hmm. district system. Mm-hmm. Modern systems that you do a lot to use, like in Los Osos, new system, probably one of the newest ever installed from scratch and like that we can point to in the state of California. But that was all done with water piping, actually. So it's pressure pipe. It's sealed about as good as you can get with, it's called C900 PVC. And so that's all gasketed and jointed. And so you don't really have a lot of infiltration into those type of systems. But with old vitrified clay pipe like we have here, it was acceptable and reasonable to have that type of pass-through in periods in the past, because septic systems were fine too. If a little bit's leaking out in the sewer line, it's just like somewhat of a septic system. And so I think that was the mentality in the past. Mm-hmm. But now it's like we can't take it coming into the plant because of the rain events.
Yeah.
And the only thing I'll add to that, President Varney, to mm-hmm. what Mr. Gent said, it's important for wastewater treatment plants with respect to minimizing stormwater intrusion because of the biological components that he spoke of. Uh-huh. There's a balance under which the biological material can process waste and get rid of it. And when you overwhelm the system with too much inflow, there's no way for the bacteria to keep up with that processing. And so that basically is what overloads the treatment system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I guess, I mean, really any flood control work we're doing, I mean, like the recharge basin at the Oceano Elementary School, which keeps water, at least theoretically, some of it out of a treatment plant, that would be a good thing for everybody. Yeah, okay. So seeing no more questions up here, Mr. Gent, if you please hang around. We're going to open it up to public comment, and I'm sure that there'll be some things you'll want to react to. Our first speaker, yes.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker, and excellent presentation, Jeremy. I did want to augment just a couple of the past challenges and controversies. When you live it, you don't forget it, right? So the sanitation district was fined $1 million. They spent about $1 million fighting that fine. So that was much of the controversy, is how much money was evaporated. When they finally ultimately decided to pay the fine, the Water Board did approve reinvestment in the community. And this is where that logo for the sanitation district ended up on the CCB project. $127,000, minimal amount of the $1 million, went to that project. And then you were married, just like Oceano CSD, with the logo and the representation that you were all partners to the bitter end. It's still there, still on their website. So I just want people to understand that. You know, you're still married to the boondoggle. You spoke about sea level rise and how the pressures of the sea and pushing on the lagoon and pushing on the creek. Sea level rise is also pushing on the groundwater. Seawater is heavier than freshwater. So as the ocean is coming in, it's coming in below the ground too, and it's pushing up groundwater. So that means that when you do have a rainstorm, there's nowhere for the water to go. Can't get in the ground because it's already been pushed by the ocean. And the last thing, and this is kind of more of a question, the fixed film reactor is, it's amazing that it's lasted as long as it has. Is there now a plan to retire it, somehow change it into something else? Dismantle it. I don't know how much longer it can go. And that 2047, I'll also be 85 years old.
Don't invest in me then.
Mr. Gant, would you like to respond to each question as it comes up? I think that would keep it in context.
Yeah, so the question I heard was about the fixed film reactor, whether that is going to be repurposed or repaired. And so, yes, absolutely. When we're done, so the fixed film reactor is currently our secondary treatment process. It does the most removal of the organics in the wastewater. And so what a fixed film reactor is there's a rotating arm on top of a bunch of plastic media. That plastic media is 12 feet deep, and there's like this 180-foot diameter tank. And we spray water through basically a sprinkler system that rotates around, and it trickles down. It's also called a trickling filter. And on this plastic media is a biofilm, and that biofilm is what's actually consuming the organics in the wastewater. And so currently, the main unit, the unit that's failing, the thing that really needs replaced is the main turntable. And so that's the thing that is in the middle that has giant bearings in it, and the steel is, we're finding shavings in the oil when we check it, so we know the bearings are wearing out. But we own that equipment already. We have a new turntable stored on site. So the district will be taking that fixed film reactor offline once we fire up our new aeration basins and replacing the media and replacing the drive unit and putting it back in service as part of a redundant system that we're required to have.
Thank you. Continuing with public comment. Yes, sir. Please tell us your name.
My name's Arthur Young. I live here in Oceano. Curious about the design error that was mentioned. Seems like an error like that should have been caught in a design review. So the question or the thought would be, was there a design review independent of the original design? And if there was, have we held the design reviewer to account for overlooking what seems like a pretty significant error?
Thank you.
That's a great question. So in this particular contract was with Kennedy Jenks Consultants. And so what's typically done on these type of projects is that a consulting firm is required to have their own in-house QA/QC program. And so what that does is they have another engineer checking their work. And that did transpire during that review. And so I don't disagree with Mr. Young's assessment, like that should have been caught during that type of review. And we agree with that, and we all know that, and the design firm knows that it should have been caught during their QA/QC review. And that's subsequently why they've admitted to their insurer that they're at fault, and it's their responsibility to make the repair. But it is unfortunate that this type of error, it's that Kennedy Jenks has been in existence for 75 years, and they've come to our meetings. Their CEO has come to our meeting. They do about $500 million in business a year. And they went on the record as saying that they're going to take care of this, and that this is the largest design error that they've ever had in their existence. And so while I'm nervous as a small agency dealing with a major insurance claim, they've been remarkable as far as stepping up and doing the right thing. It's important to note that these design firms, when they're bidding on other projects right now, they have to disclose this. They have to disclose this claim. They have to disclose this error. So they want to put this behind them as fast as possible too, because it does have an impact when they're bidding on projects. And I know if I reviewed an RFP and it had these type of errors in it, I would want to make sure I'm hiring a consultant that either addressed it or didn't have those type of problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the only thing I'll add to that, President Varney and Mr. Gent, is that when it comes to design review, most engineering design review focuses on high-level functioning of a system. Will it work? Is the slab the right thickness? Is it designed properly? It is unusual that an independent review would include structural mathematic calculation reviews, although someone like Mr. Gent or myself might ask for that now more frequently than we might have in the past. But really, it was a mathematical error more so than anything else. And so, yeah, it's lessons learned, and it is a good thing that the designer has taken responsibility.
Okay. Any other public comment? Yes? Your turn.
Hi, my name is Giselle Naylor, and I don't have enough information to really understand, to be able to visualize what we're doing. And the engineering is going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing to watch it from the ground up. I want pictures. I want maps. Dare I say that there's, like, Werner Street is missing from the district voter map. So, you know, I like maps that show the name of every street. So if a street somehow disappears from our district voter map, it doesn't happen, like, on something like this. But, I mean, you probably are thinking this is a nightmare for me saying I wish this, but I really want to see it happen. You know, I don't know how you guys get all this information together, but I would love to see, you know, from this date to this date, the plan is we're going to start working on the replacing pipes or equipment, whatever, on this street. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong the farther down you go on sand closer to the district. To me, that's the amazing miracle of engineering. You can make a large foundation of concrete to stabilize what's on top of it. But what, you know, what happens underneath? And how to protect the electrical? I know there's ways to do it. I've never seen it, but I know it exists. To protect the electrical components from getting any kind of water into it. I want to see it. I want maps. I want photographs. I want, ideally, public notice that, you know, on this date, you know, this section is going to get worked on. I'm not saying there's going to be people standing right over you, you know, where you're working, but so that they can get an idea. And then, ideally, I'd like to see right down to the work orders what equipment. How much is, you know, one phase going to cost, even if you can't provide it all. And then, in the contract, I hope there's penalty clauses that if they say, oh, we're going to get it done by this date, and then rain, flood, earthquake, contractor strike, you know, mistakes, whoever's going to receive the bulk of this money, there should be some kind of penalty clause that if they don't come through within a reasonable time period.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was quite a bit. If you want to,
sure. Well,
yeah.
So, just clarify. So, the sanitation district. The project that I'm referring to is at the treatment plant site. We're not working on pipes in the ground, but Peter, General Manager Brown, certainly will be with the development of the item on 9C with the CIP plan, and I think you'll see some of that type of work. As far as damages, so if they're late, absolutely, we have what's called liquidated damages on the project. This particular project, that's estimated based on what our cost of inspection and engineering oversight is. And so that amounts $3,500 a day, and the contractor and the design team have been tagged with paying that $3,500 a day liquidated damages for not having the project done. So absolutely. And then a question on whether rain delays. Rain days built into the project, the contractor doesn't have to work. We don't want to force a contractor to work during rain. So that's actually an excused absence. We don't penalize a contractor for a rain day. And then, there was a question about what did we do if there was a worker strike. Luckily, on this particular project, under the board's supervision, they directed the district to pursue what's called a project labor agreement or a community workforce agreement. And part of that agreement is with the trades group, and it ensures a certain number of local hires, a certain amount of union labor used on the project. But what they get, what we get in return is they're absolutely not allowed to strike for any reason. So we have absolute labor peace throughout the project. And so we haven't been impacted by any type of strike. And I will point out, this project has been delivered entirely through the entire pandemic and supply chain disruption. And up until that structural failure at the end, it was a remarkable project because the team did deliver it. And it's unfortunate that we don't all get to carry that feather in our cap because of that one flaw, but we were getting ready to go and start up on schedule and under budget. So it's unfortunate, but I'm glad we found out about the failure before we took over the project and the contractor was gone, because if that was the case, we'd have a system that didn't work and we'd be trying to find a contractor to come back and fix it. So thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. I'll bring it back to the board for discussion.
I think I like the code generation, and I think, you know, it's a great money saver and using every part. And I think that maybe everybody will sleep better when we have the redundancy project working. I worry about that sometimes.
Director Sennison, do you have any thoughts? Director Gibson?
Well, I just want to thank Mr. Yip for coming tonight and giving the report. And I was on the board when he was hired, and it was one of, like, the best decision I think that we've made. The plant's been running now better than I think it ever has, and due to his leadership and his professionalism, his knowledge, thank God he was the one working when the discovered the damage to the, you know, the failure of the parts. So I just want to say that the sewer plant, the sanitation district's been my neighbor all my life. I don't, we don't really even know it's there. And I think it's a lot of the positive things now becoming this leadership. And I know the staff is all very productive and happy, and I enjoy serving on that board and seeing all the progress that's made, all the positive things that are coming. And we don't, you know, all the past is the past. And anyway, I just want to thank you very much for what you've been doing over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say ditto to that and just add a little bit here. I just so much appreciate you coming here tonight, Jeremy, and the time and energy you put into this presentation. I think that this model of transparency on your part will pays huge dividends in the long run to the community in terms of your openness, your frankness, a sense of comfort that more comfort people would have to come to you with questions or come to us with questions. And certainly down the line, when ultimately we see the kinds of capital improvements that we're going to have to make, both at the sanitation district ongoing and in our own delivery system. I mean, when we're talking about clay pipes, we're talking about going back old school. And those don't last, and it just so happens that it's coming during our watch that we need to do some work on those things. So I think the more knowledge that we have, the better prepared we are, the less surprises, and the more support that there's going to be community-wide. So I really applaud you in your openness and you know, being willing to come tonight and spend time with us. Very much appreciated. Mr. Brown, I'll come back to you in terms of any final comments you have, and then this is an information item tonight. We don't have any action on this.
No final comments other than to thank Mr. Jen and for his cooperation and partnership in putting together the report and the presentation.
One more thing, to kind of do full circle. You circulated the explanation piece here for the recharge project up at Oceana Elementary School, and our One Cool Earth environmental educators are educating all the kids at Oceano Elementary School of what's going on underneath the classroom. And so they've been sparked. It's like, well, how many of you kids, like, how many of you flush your toilets? Well, where's that go? Well, we don't know. And so they're getting educated on that. And then they went, well, it goes over there. We want to go see that thing. And Mr. Gant so is setting up field trips for Oceano Elementary kids to come over and do a tour of the wastewater treatment plant. So, I mean, that's really great and great for our community. So thanks again on that. All right. We'll move on to business item B, which is, this is an action item with regards to payments to the Local Agency Formation Commission for costs associated with divestiture. And I don't know, is Ms. Cassiola, is this?
No, I'll take this one, President Barney.
All right.
So the item before the board tonight is really to provide staff direction regarding payments of up to $9,500 to LAFCO for expenses incurred to date and possible direct mailers. And just as a way, like general overview, the way LAFCO works when they deal with changes in boundaries, changes in services, in our case, divestiture of fire services, their staff time for the work they provide to a specific topic is paid for by the agency seeking that change. In this case, it's us. And the way they work is on basically a deposit basis. We've deposited with them two $3,500 deposits, which is their standard deposit. When they run short, they let us know and they ask us to provide another one. And that's what they've done recently. And that's what prompted this staff report. The one nuance about it is that when we reported to the board a couple of months ago, we were under the impression that about a $6,000 deposit would go towards direct mailers. And in consultation with LAFCO staff and their legal counsel, and I believe our legal counsel has reviewed the government code in question as well, those direct mailers are not required for this particular type of divestiture. It's optional, and the board could still decide to go with direct mailers. The only difference is they need another deposit of $6,000 because they've exhausted the money that we've given them in the form of two $3,500 payments and one $6,000 mailer. They've used all of that for staff time. And so the way we laid out the staff report is really just to give the board the background and the information needed to make that decision. The staff recommendation is item two, which would be to deposit only $3,500 for LAFCO costs and use alternative noticing methods such as website and newspaper advertising and forgo direct mailers. But certainly if the board wanted to go the extra mile and put up the additional $6,000, the direct mailer option is available. So happy to take any questions the board may have.
Just to clarify, this the only people allowed to vote in this are Oceano Community Services District recipients?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Right, okay.
Question, what do the mailers do? Is there an opportunity to do something on the mailer?
Yeah, it basically informs the residents of the protest hearing. It's similar to what we would do for a Prop 218 hearing. And folks could come and say, I don't want the divestiture to take place. And there's a formal procedure for protesting the particular change in jurisdiction. It is very unlikely that if we do that, that any thresholds would be met. But it's certainly, that's the intent, is just information.
Right.
Could you just explain what you mean by threshold?
Well, it's different for divestiture than it is for Prop 218, but the process is the same. I don't have the details. I don't know if it's a 50% threshold. I'm not sure if you're aware, Mr. Minery, for divestiture.
I'm not sure the threshold generally would be 50% plus one. So I will double check on that and get back to you. Well,
so 50% of our customers would need to go to the meeting, protest the divestiture, or 50% plus one, and then it would go to a vote of the community?
No, I don't know the process after that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a vote to the community, but the LAFCO board wouldn't be able to approve the divestiture if the threshold was met.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if it requires attendance or if it can be a written protest. I don't think attendance is required.
Okay. So really the question in front of us right now is, do we want to go with the cheaper method of informing the community without shortchanging the community? We want people to, we want to be as transparent as we can and let people know about this potential. And I think we've had a lot of publicity about this over the last year.
That is the basic question. You know, staff's take on it is this is not a new item. It comes to the board regularly. It's been a discussion that's been going on for several years. That's one side of the coin. And the other side is that spending the extra $6,000 may not change the result of the outcome, but it certainly is optional if the board wants to inform folks with a direct mailer.
But why don't we hear from the public on this? We'll open up public hearing on this item 9B.
Julie Tacker, and I wonder if you can split the baby and put the information in your water bill. That way they get it and you didn't spend $6,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, April Drury. I'm wondering if maybe you guys could instruct staff to find out exactly what the rules are on how to protest, et cetera. So what's going to be on the mailer? Like, will it be instructions on what happens next? Mm-hmm. And I think that would be important to know before we know if the mailers are even worth sending.
Hi, Gina. If they were put in the bill, a lot of residents here are renters, and a lot of the bills go directly to the owners. So if we're doing a vote with the community, a lot of them would be uninformed of the situation. So I don't know, that's a good answer for that. Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Mine's gonna be short and
sweet. Well, come up to the microphone, please.
Said only, my understanding is the residents get to vote on it, or you said something like that. I think the question is, did just the homeowners have a say in this, or does everybody that lives in Oceano have a say on this?
Thank you.
I mean, you know, I'm up to here with what's been happening with fire services, so whatever, just, you know, the least amount of expense for sending out flyers with the most amount of people informed.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Minery.
President Varney, both the homeowners and any tenants of homeowners have the right to participate in the process.
So anybody that's served by the CSD and is of voting age can participate.
And President Varney, if I may, the written protest hearing process that LAFCO follows is in the government code, and unfortunately, we are not allowed to substitute that with additional information in a bill. That could be informative or illuminating, but it doesn't meet the requirement of the protest hearing that LAFCO must follow. And I think it also might be helpful for the board and the public to know that the government code section that dictates how this occurs, it's 56.157 section H, it allows for publishing a display advertisement of at least 1/8 of a page in a newspaper, which is would be the alternative. We would also put it up on our website, and so would LAFCO. And that's for when noticing exceeds 1,000 persons. So the threshold in the government code says, if you have a community that's dealing with an issue and it's less than 1,000, you must do a direct mailer. If it's over 1,000, then you have the newspaper option. And for us, it would be augmented by website or even bill information to get the word out to the community. So just so you know, we're well above the 1,000 threshold here in Oceano, even for a small community that we are.
Any other public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment, come back to directors. Any further discussion? Director Gibson?
Yes. Given that a lot of people in the community really don't even know what the OCSD is or exists, I'm really for the, I'd like to save money. And there's been so much talk, the people that know what's going on, and so this is the very end of the process. And I just think we have to be realistic that there, you know, in a newspaper, can it go on social media? Okay, I think you reach more people that way than a mailer. So those are my comments.
Echo.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with Director Gibson that I think we should not do the mail, not do the flyer, save the money, mm-hmm. and use the newspaper.
Okay, it sounds like we look for a motion to approve staff's recommendation.
We'll make a motion to approve recommendation number 2 of the staff recommendation of agenda item 9B.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the vote?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sunderson?
Yes.
And President Barney?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to business item 9C, which is consideration of awarding a contract for the district sanitary sewer capital improvement project, engineering, and related services. So we're dealing with a lot of sewer stuff tonight. Mr. Brown?
Yeah, that's right, President Barney. So one of the things that the board did back in March was approve the posting of a request for professional services. One of the things I did in July was really dove into that draft RFP and did my best to ensure that it was detailed and updated and posted as soon as possible, because I see this as a critical issue for the district. We put up the RFP. We received a lot of questions and interest from different consulting firms that resulted in no less than 5 addendums. So typically, just so the board knows and the public knows, during the public bidding process, you want to make sure that everyone has the same information. And so when a consultant comes and says, oh, what's the detail on this issue related to the RFP, we post an addendum so that everyone that's interested in the project can have the same information. So 5 addendums went up. We did a tour, optional tour of our district and our services and our hotspots and our lift stations, so that potential respondents for professional engineering services could see our system. And I think that helped inform at least 2 of the proposals, because we had 2 folks attend that tour. And those proposers ended up being the top 2 ranked proposers, and they really showed the interest in the local knowledge. What I tried to do in the staff report is kind of let the board know a little bit more about our sewer collection and conveyance system and the needs that it has in terms of how old our pipes are, how undersized our lift station is, and how the fact that, as someone who has managed 2 other sanitary districts in my career, I have never seen a set of video that is still on VHS tape. But when I asked what's our latest CCTV data, it's from the 90s. So in other words, typically when you want to know the condition of an underground pipe, you put a camera down there, and the camera has wheels, and you can direct it to go 5 feet, 10 feet, 120 feet, and you record that video, and you can really look at the condition of the pipe. We haven't done an assessment like that since the 90s. And so I think it's long overdue, and that'll be a significant component of the cost for this sewer CIP, will be to really analyze our system. We also, it's worth noting in the staff report, we did a quality-based services proposal, which basically dictates that we have to look at the firm's capacity, abilities, skills, staffing, but we can't look at their price. So price is left out of the equation. And so I think that's important to know that we've made this evaluation regardless of how much the top responding bidders proposed for cost. I guess the last part that I'll say is I wanted to thank all three firms that put in the time and effort. It's very difficult to put together a proposal of this magnitude. I thought all three firms did a good job. Three independent partners ranked the proposals. They concurred that two of the proposals were significantly better put together than the third one. And so what we did at that point is we moved forward with interviews of the top two firms. And to be honest with you, they were both excellent. I would have no trouble issuing a contract for either of them to do the work for us. But what we laid out in the staff recommendation was, first thing, review the proposals, which I know you all did. Our recommendation is to award a professional service contract to Water Systems Consulting and direct the general manager to negotiate final details and costs of the contract, including a contingency for a maximum of $300,000. And absent the ability to secure services that meet our needs at the cost that we'd like, the recommendation also includes moving on to the closely ranked second consultant, MCAN and Associates, for a similar contract amount not to exceed. And I think if you were to ask the review panel of folks that are very familiar with both firms, you ask one, they might have given the nod to WSC. You ask another, they might have given the nod to MKN. Again, it was a very close competition, but I'm hoping that we can answer any questions the board may have and move forward with the recommendation before you.
Okay. Thank you. So open questions for directors. Yes, Director Gibson.
So it looks like the main difference was based on the interview skills, the presentation.
That I think one of the firms did a better job in the interview. Certainly, that's true. I think the scores reflect that. But again, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, intangibles. But mm-hmm. In terms of the tally.
It seems like that should be of lesser value than, say, engineering skills.
Again, I agree. I would say the engineering skills are on par with each other. Yeah.
And is MKN, I'm sorry, are they the ones doing the Kenmar Gardens?
They are working with us and the state on the consolidation projects for Kenmar and Halcyon, working on the design for those for our water system. That's true.
So they did get picked for that?
They did, yeah.
Okay. I think that's all for now.
I don't really have any questions right now.
Okay. Director Senison. Just one question, Mr. Brown. The scores... there's a ranking, and one of them came in at 325 points and the other one at 324. So, I mean, quantitatively, there really no significant difference here. I'm uncomfortable moving forward as a director without knowing the costs that are associated with this. I know that that's part of this process, and this is what I want to get clarity on. Does it make a difference whether we name Water Systems Consultants or MKN as the preferred of the two for you to go forward and actually, with due diligence, connect with both of them and ultimately end up with estimates from each of those and bring those back to us?
Yeah, unfortunately, President Barney, that's not possible because of the way that the public contract code is set up for quality-based service assessment. And as I tried to say, and I'll attempt to reiterate now, costs are not one of the factors we can use when we're trying to attempt to determine someone's ability to provide services under this process. You can do a process where you include costs as one of the criteria, but we didn't do that this time. In fact, we consulted with the state board on this particular outreach. And I understand your concern, not knowing what the cost would be. At the same time, we do have the ability to negotiate the costs. So what you do is, once you rank a firm, and because they were so closely ranked, you know, I, as a general manager, made the ultimate decision to rank one above the other in a coin toss situation. Then, under that process, I was able to determine their costs, which they provided after the fact. And that's how you got this information in your staff report. So we only know what WSC has proposed, and we don't know what MKN has proposed. The thing I like about the process is, if the board approves the staff recommendation the way it's written, I have the ability to negotiate with WSC, given our budget constraints, given our, you know, very difficult situation with in terms of capital reserves for the sewer system, and attempt to get the maximum amount of services for the minimum amount of costs. And if we can't achieve that, then under the QBS system, quality-based assessment, I can then say, okay, I'm going to move on to MKN. MKN, what is your proposed cost? And begin that negotiation process. And it's somewhat unusual that you have two firms that are so well equipped and capable of doing that. But I do feel comfortable that regardless of who we end up with at the end, we're going to have really good help developing a top-notch CIP.
Okay. Can I just ask a question?
So basically, we don't want to skimp on, you know, a dollar amount. You know, we're really going for, you know, based on merit and abilities and experience.
Correct. And this is basically a guiding document for at least the next 10 to 15 years for how we invest in our sewer system. Mm-hmm. And so just for order of magnitude, we have around $1.2 million in reserves in our sewer system. 25% of that would be an investment in engineering and services to really lay out a 10-year plan. And again, I think if I didn't mention the staff report, I'll mention it again now, grants are going to be a way for us to get there in terms of the capital improvements, and we would seek assistance from whoever is awarded the contract to help us seek grants we're competitive for capital improvements, or even for design work to get this project to the finish line. And so I feel confident that we'll be able to get some grant funding for some of the work.
Were they equal in, like, their follow-up? Like, if it's a 10-year plan and, you know, they do X amount of work and there's a problem, and so is there any problem with them coming back in? And
that would probably be a separate activity. I mean, one thing we did put in the RFP is that we know that this particular capital improvement program will lead to more work. It's going to lead to more design work, construction management work, construction work. And there is an opportunity for either firm to assist in those endeavors going forward. But what's before you tonight is simply the issuing of a contract for professional services to develop that capital improvement plan. Okay. And that guiding document.
Okay, so that will be later on. Okay.
Dr. Austin?
Well, I don't know if I'm missing what each one says, the contract not to exceed $300,394. So you say they can't tell their price, so it's like they can't go over 300, 394, but we don't know how much they're going to be.
Well, we know
that.
Because we've selected WSC as the top ranked firm, we were able to open their fee schedule.
Oh, I see. That's
there. And what I've done for the board is I've said, hey, look, here's your opportunity. Give me the direction to negotiate that contract and that final amount, not to exceed their proposal plus a 15% contingency, and absent my ability to come to terms with WSC, give me the direction to then seek assistance from MKN for the same cap. I don't know what MKN could have proposed $200,000. They could have proposed $450,000. But what I'm trying to say to the board is that, to me, is a reasonable range based on the work that I think is available and the work that I've done in this industry for the last 15 years. It seems like a reasonable fee to me. And I would, if I was asked to negotiate with MKN, I would ask to start at that area, with a not to exceed $300,000.
Now, did either of them have more of an ability to get grants that you talked about?
They both included in their proposal. I don't know that I was able to discern that one or the other would be better at helping us get grants. I think what I would like to see in the final proposal is some more specific time and line items dedicated towards helping us get those grants. But that's TBD based on negotiations.
Again, we're going to get to public comment very quickly. What if the vote of the board tonight is to that we prefer MKN?
Then I would have to go back and open up the MKN proposal, see what that dollar amount is, and bring a new staff report back to the board in November.
And at that point, you would have both estimates.
I would, but I would be directed to work with MKN under that condition, not WSC.
Okay.
What would be the basis for choosing MKN over?
That would be something we will take up when we have discussion. So we'll go to public comment now.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. And I don't know if the intent was to have the scorecard in front of you tonight, but it wasn't there in the board packet. And I made a call this afternoon and asked that it be included. And I think it's imperative that you read each and every comment that's associated with each person's score sheet. First, I'd like to say that MKN has extensive experience working at the Sand District, and their knowledge of Oceano's sewer over water is also extensive. The 1 point does not tip the scale in WSC's favor. Some of the comments, one of the surveyors, I don't know who's who here, I liked the specific OCSD examples they provided and potential funding ideas / opportunity presented, discussed known OCSD issues. This is speaking of MKN. Also, MKN, but one of the comments is a strong team and that they followed directions. They say, this is the only criticism of MKN, is they weren't as polished as WSC. We don't need polish. We don't need polish. We don't need cartoons in a PowerPoint presentation. I am not in favor of WSC. WSC is not a friend of Oceano's. They think your wells are closer to the ocean than the other wells in the NCMA. They are mistaken. They use that information to fraudulently get grant money. They use the information from your demographics to get grant money for the Central Coast Blue Project. Did you get any of that money? Did that money benefit Oceano? Hell no. WSC was recently terminated from another small community services district, Heritage Ranch, last May. I believe the reasons are captured in some of the comments from one of the commenters about open-ended and doesn't provide contractual advice. Open-ended consulting isn't what you want. You want a deadline and you want a price and you want it. You don't want change orders and you don't want continued rising costs. WSC didn't follow RFP instructions.
Thank you.
Both teams can get the job done is what it says.
Thank you. More public comment, please come forward. Sir?
In this blizzard of intangible, important fact information, I heard something related to the Public Resources Code. I think there was a question as to whether the people that are competing for this bid should be able to, or it's I can figure out a rationale why they might want to get specific as to what materials they would use, because in a way, if they have an edge over choosing one material over another that's better quality, why they wouldn't want to divulge it before they got the contract. And I might have misunderstood what I was hearing, but quality-based service assessment, that term was used somehow related to what materials, you know, are we paying for? I mean, there are whole textbooks written on how to, you know, bid a contract, construction contract, and what materials you're going to use, because that's what they teach up at Cal Poly. You can go into the bookstore and, you know, drown yourself in how this is done. But the it seems like the basic labor and materials, if you're testing, if you want to test, you know, the people that you're going to negotiate with, having a materials engineer, the people that are, you know, putting this plan together, ought to be able to come up with, well, ideally, you know, we want the best quality materials, and so from materials stress testing studies in the components, we would want something like this. Do you think that we could get, you know, this quality of material within our budget? You know what I mean? I'm thinking small, but you're expanding to a $39 million budget. You ought to be able to throw out something like that and get feedback without them having to divulge their work product before they get the bid, if you understand. Engineers should be negotiating. Materials engineers or engineering fields that this guy might be able to
stay up close to the microphone if you want to keep talking, please.
I don't know. I just wish, I know ever since I was a little coming from the big city, I've always wanted to see how things got put together. When you live in a big city, you don't see how things get constructed from the ground up. And we're in such a, it's important. We're in the new
Thank
age.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Next speaker.
Again, Arthur Young. Going back to the earlier comment about the design review, I think I'm going to push back on that a little bit. There was a notion that there's a quality assurance department at the design engineering company and that they'll catch these design errors. They don't do that. That's not what a QA department at a design engineering company does. That is not a design review. So. Just so that we don't have this happen to us again, I would suggest, just as a line item for whoever gets the contract, that there be a task that in developing the capital improvement project, that they make recommendations on which of the projects would require an independent design review. So if you had your own consulting firm do that, they could specify which projects might be best to have a kind of an independent review, just to assure that we don't have, we're relying on the design engineers, QA department, to figure out that they made a design error.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. I'll go to staff. Do you have any response to any public comment?
Yeah, President Varney, I think I've heard similar criticisms to the first speaker in terms of, you know, WSC and their relationship with Central Coast Blue and grant writing and whatever else. I actually don't think that has any bearing on a sewer capital improvement plan. I've also not found any merit in those criticisms in terms of the professionalism or the skills and abilities of WSC. I think two of the other speakers might have been slightly confused. This particular capital improvement plan is a planning document. It's not about materials that we may use in pipe replacements. I think the plan will recommend certain pipes be replaced. The plan will also recommend that certain pipes be repaired or lined or pipe burst. There's lots of different methods for pipe repair, and this plan will recommend those things, but it won't get into the specifics of construction details. And then I believe the last speaker may have still been talking about a prior item and not this one.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the board for discussion and ultimately an action on this. I think Director Gibson, you were wanting to address something.
No, I'll see what everyone else says. Okay.
Director Austin.
Well, are we supposed to decide now?
You could ask staff to come back. I don't know that there's any more information to gather, but again, it was a very close competition. I think that what we've laid out before you provides all the options to maximize benefit for our district, but I'm also happy to take any alternative direction the board seeks.
Director Sonnison, do you have any comments at this point?
Well, it does seem like MKN is more familiar with Oceano.
I don't know that they're more familiar with Oceano. I think familiarity with the community is helpful. This particular capital improvement plan is going to require investigation. So even if we didn't have a local firm, both of these firms have offices in San Luis Obispo. If we had someone from Santa Barbara or Fresno that was really qualified, really investigations need to take place in the form of that cameraing CCTV that I talked about and videoing our lines to really understand them. So I would put that as more important than local knowledge, for example.
Well, I'm leaning at MKN because they have worked in Oceano. I'm very familiar with the company from the work at the sanitation district. So my confidence would be it going with the MKN.
Mm-hmm. In my review of both of the proposals, they were right on. I mean, they all were doing the same things, kind of the same process. I liked, I thought they were both very strong. A few things stood out for me in terms of MKN. I liked the way that they emphasized more coordinating with our utility staff, and Mr. Maricino, and coordinating their cleaning processes with then being able to follow up with the CCTV stuff. I mean, I'm sure that would happen with the other provider as well. It makes real good common sense, but that was really clearly laid out there. I got a sense of MKN having a much stronger schedule timeline definitively laid out in terms of what products that they would be producing. I thought that their suggestion or their component about seeking funding possibilities for us was more detailed, more comprehensive. And certainly there needs to be more T's and I's in there. But I was very much impressed with that. I really liked the way they laid out, I think kind of piggybacking on Director Austin here, that I thought they did have significantly more specific experience with the kinds of issues that we're facing than WSC had. And they did a great job of laying that out, specifically long lists of, like, here's all the lift stations, work that we've done. I got school tonight on the process and in terms of not being able to have the cost estimate. But I agree with Director Austin that I think MKN would be my choice if I was making one.
I actually have another question. They both had maps showing areas of weakness. Now, did their areas of weakness kind of match up with each other? That map was kind of hard to read. the street map.
Do you mean weaknesses of the firms or our system?
No, our system.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they both assessed the system accurately, and basically they got a lot of that information from us and our past studies and the field review, and they both took the time to come down and tour the system and really find out where our root intrusion issues are, where our propensity for sanitary sewer overflows may occur. So yeah, they're both fairly equal in that term.
Okay.
Do you want to make the motion?
Yes. If we're ready for a motion.
Well, is there any more discussion on the board?
No.
Seeing none, yes, I think we're ready for a motion.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we direct the general manager to begin negotiations with MKN and Associates.
I'll second that.
Yeah, the only thing I might add, if the motion maker would like to put that in there, it requires for the QBS that we change our ranking. And that we designate MKN as the top-ranked firm, in which case we can then begin negotiation with them. So if you could add that to your motion, I think that would clarify.
Okay, so I'd like to amend my motion to add MKN as the top-ranking applicant.
Okay.
And continue the negotiation.
Okay, I'll second that. Any further discussion? Call the question then, Ms. Cassiola, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
President Barney?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
And Vice President Joyce Sunderson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We'll come back in November with this item.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Okay, now we move to item 9D. This is to review details of district applying for a county project grant application to fund community celebration at the Oceano Plaza.
Thank you, President Barney, members of the board. What has been happening over the last month is some planning and work to establish what may happen at a grand opening event, a community celebration event. If you recall, a couple of meetings ago, the board unanimously approved moving forward with applying for a $2,500 grant from District 4 for a community celebration. It's called the San Luis Obispo County Community Project Grant. That grant requires specific information to be in it in order for us to be evaluated at the county. And I think at the last OPARC meeting, there finally was sufficient detail, and that's what's before the board tonight. I think there's two sets of two options. The first one is to consider the OPARC recommendations and to go ahead and move forward with applying for the grant, or if the board feels as though more information is needed, request that OPARC and the planning committee hold future meetings, gather more details, refine the event planning, perhaps refine the event date. So those are options one and two before the board. Options three and four, I try to get a lot of things done in this meeting. A prior OPARC motion was to seek board approval for the pop-up tent, and I think the cost exceedance was $500 for the pop-up tent and the banner. And there's also an opportunity for the board to authorize $2,500 for OPARC-related expenses so that OPARC doesn't have to come back to the board and seek approval. And so that is an opportunity under item three, or if the board feels more comfortable with the only item that they know that is specific, which is the pop-up tent and the banner, that would be recommendation number four, and to not allow the $2,500 at OPARC's discretion. This is about the third time the item has come. I'm happy to provide more detail, but if any of the members of OPARC would like to kind of illuminate any of the work that you've done in order to come up with what you'll see on page two, the proposed budget, and some of the activities planned and the date proposed for Saturday, November 16th from noon to 3, and a theme of celebrating the community of Oceano. That's what OPARC and its planning committee have proposed. And that's the question before the board is, would you like to go ahead and apply for that grant at this time?
Okay. Thank you. So we'll go to questions from directors And I don't know, Director Sunnison, did you want to elaborate on anything?
Yeah, because I don't really see an actual plan. So I guess what would be happening there? Activities and music, food, etc. And I read somewhere about coupons, and I thought food coupons, and I thought that wasn't allowed with the county grant. I don't know. And then what would be the purpose of the pop-up tent, and would we be using it other times? Because I think there's quite a range in cost of pop-up tents available. So I'd like to see a lot more information on here, and who does clean up and set up, and just to know what's going on. Like if you have a little handout for people so they know what's going on at noon and 1 and 2 and until the end. Mm-hmm. And also how you would reach different age groups to let them know about it. Because I think we'd like it to be obviously family and, seniors and whatever. So I think I'm wondering if you have like a public relations person to, make sure that there's knowledge of the event ahead of time.
Do you want to say that the optimum group would be handling the cleanup? Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Just the pop-up tent. Is it the tent thing, or is it just the easy up?
Easy up.
Okay.
Yeah, an easy up. Okay. So this is a time we'll open it up for public comment.
Good evening again, April Dury. I just more so on the money wanted to point out a few things out. It's not out of the realm of possibility to ask the county to waive their fee to have the event. So that would definitely save some money, especially this being not quite nonprofit in the 501c3 sense, but it being a community event that's not really about making money or anything like that. And then having ran a farmer's market myself and been in farmer's markets, a pop-up tents are roughly about $100, a nice banner that has the OCSD logo and it says Parks and Recs, that'd run you some money. But the tent itself is not very much. So I think you could save a couple bucks here. I don't understand why there's this contrarian desire to have this all mapped out and ready to go when you don't even know if you have the money for it yet. So I feel like there's a cart over here and a horse over here, and I'm not quite sure why that's wanted. But I see the vision, and I think you guys could save a little bit of money. Thanks.
Other further public comment? Yes, ma'am.
I still want to talk about the sewer project.
Oh, this isn't, that's not the topic for right now. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You can, we'll provide you with Mr. Gent's phone number and you can give him a call tomorrow.
Don't
do that. He used to like me. Okay. Okay, all right. Let's bring it back here. I don't see any more public comment, so we'll close public comment on this. I think that. It is correct that the main focus here is to, in a timely manner, apply for this grant. This isn't a grant that, while our supervisor, Paul Dean, is very supportive of it, his office does not make the decision. He certainly has to approve sending it on to the county group that makes the decision. So this could be, I mean, we're still waiting for Lucia Marr to get the $25,000 check from the grant from the county. I think that this is time sensitive. I believe that there is enough information provided. We have the specific date, the location, the time. There is a meeting tomorrow at 5:00 at the plaza for the planning team. Will be a special meeting at Woe Park, but focused on the planning team, and we're going to be meeting there with surrounding business owners, with potential disc jockeys, and just other and all the people that are on the planning team, and anybody that wants to join us. And the details that you bring up, Director Gibson, the date is Saturday, November 16th. That is more than a month away. All of those things are coming into play. We have, one person has reached out to a group of young folklorico dancers. I have reached out to a salsa dancing group that is interested in coming and dancing and giving lessons. The AG High School robotics team is interested in coming and doing a demonstration and having an activity for kids to be able to control robots running around, hopefully not knocking into any of the sculptures. And then community members who certainly will have some celebratory speeches, certainly some historical references to the area and the plaza itself, and that's all going to come together, and there's plenty of time for that. So I think that I would just encourage you to all be confident that moving forward with this grant application, to, you know, secure the money, that the planning, the program, oh, by the way, Jasmine Carraza is doing, working up a draft of a flyer that we will be plugging in more specifics to. So that's in the works. We have a fairly large group of people committed to disseminating information, both through Oceano Elementary School network of parents, social media, through our website here at the district. I would encourage, I'm sorry I don't have that specific document in front of me, Mr. Brown, but that we move forward with approving the grant application and the provision for the pop-up and the $2,000 limit on expenditures by Woe Park through the rest of the year.
Director Gibson, there is a youth organization that has volunteered and committed to doing the cleanup, to answer your question.
Okay. Has the grant application been filled out yet?
I don't think that it's been completely filled out because we didn't have the sufficient information. I wrote a draft of it, and I'm sure that staff will, you know, build on that and improve that.
Well, I'm not really in favor of staff doing Woe Park work. I mean, it costs money. I mean, not just the money, but it's the time. And if staff's working on Woe Park, then they're not doing the real work of the district. And what if...
Excuse me.
What if...
Woe Park is part of the real work.
Yeah, let's let her finish.
Well, it's not... It is not the same as water, sewer, garbage, etc. Okay? Those are for the health and safety of the community. And Woe Park is not ranked with them. Now, what if you have the event and the money still hasn't come in? Right. What if you have the event on November 16th and you still don't know if the grant will be coming?
Well, I think if we don't get the grant and we don't reserve the plaza because we don't have the money, then there's not going to be an event.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't support this because you've had all this time. Now you're down to about, 5 or 6 weeks? I mean, that's soon, and there's no there to approve.
Well, I think speaking for the, you know, maybe 12 people that have been working on this, I think that they would differ with you that there's no there. There's a lot of there, and this is moving us into the big there. Certainly, Oak Park is for people's everyday lives, not as critical as water, sewage, and garbage. But there is a lot of social, emotional, public health benefit for parks and recreation. And if we can do that for our community, why would we not want to do that for our community? So,
well, I agree with that part, but nothing has happened between the last meeting and this meeting. We're still talking about the same thing. So if the project is not really moving forward, then we're just marking time.
Well, I just don't think that's factually true, Director Gibson. A lot has happened. We have all the specifics now lined up necessary to apply for the grant. And the planning group has had two meetings, and we have identified disc jockeys. We've identified businesses that we want to support. They're participating in the meeting tomorrow. We have entertainment that we're getting lined up. The program is starting to come together, and yes, we have 6 weeks to complete it. That's plenty of time.
The local businesses are very excited about this. Mm-hmm.
So then I'd like to make a motion that we approve the application for a community event to the county, and we also approve the purchase of a pop-up or donation of a pop-up and a banner and a $2,000 spending limit for Oak Park through the remainder of 2024.
I'll second that.
And to clarify, President Barney, it looks like based on the way the staff recommendation is written out in the staff report, you're moving 1 and 3.
1 and 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Approving staff report recommendations 1 and 3. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
I second that.
Call for the question.
President Barney?
Yes.
Vice President Joy Sunnison?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
No, my suggestion is that it come back with more information and put the date out maybe 2 months so there's really adequate time.
Thank you for your
plan.
No vote.
Just let her finish talking.
We're voting here. The time for talking is over with. We had discussion. So this is the time to vote.
May I continue? Director Austin.
Well, I have an issue because of I may have to abstain because there's been a lot of back and forth emails from a member of the audience here that feels that I have a conflict of interest because of the Little Triangle Park. That is definitely not a conflict of interest. So I don't want to get, it's just another attempt to try to turn something wonderful, that's a 48-year Little Triangle piece of property that has been dedicated to public use that now is turning into where I don't know that if I vote to support a community event there that I'm going to get turned into the FPPC. Hmm. So I'm really sorry because I support the event, so I'm going to abstain.
Thank you. I was just going to ask you that.
No, well, because of, you know.
Do you have any comment on that, Mr. Minery, or in terms of?
You want to tell them what's been going on?
Well, there's concerns from public that Director Austin has a conflict based on the location of property that she owns and the park where the event would occur. And so in the abundance of caution, it appears that Director Austin is abstaining from the vote so as not to interfere one way or another based on the information she's heard tonight.
Okay. And this person has also made this complaint from the other 8 unfounded complaints on this same piece of property. Then the FPPC said then there was no conflict. There never will be, and so I just want to wait. We'll get a letter, I guess, stating that I can, you know, keep functioning as a part of this community without being harassed constantly.
Thank you. At this point, we have motion and a second, and did we finish the roll call vote?
Yes, yeah. I have
finished
two.
The roll call vote, and it's 2 with 1 abstention and 1 no. So the item is over, and I think there should be further discussion as far as how an alternative idea could be brought back to the board again.
So you're saying the motion doesn't pass?
Motion does not pass.
Okay. How can Director Austin have a conflict if there's no money involved?
Tell me. Ask her.
Director Austin has been subject to FPPC complaints in regards to this same matter with this, in regards to a different item,
right,
but with this same piece of property that she owns, and that complaint went to the FPPC. There was an investigation, and as far as I understand it, there was no actual response or formative decision from the FPPC, so the matter still remains out there.
Okay.
Except for the $5,000 it cost Linda.
Well, that was combined with all the other complaints that were baseless.
Well, so the item doesn't pass.
But
just
if I may, President Barney.
Yeah.
Given the fact that we did not have a majority of the board able to support this item tonight.
Please.
What we can do is continue the work, I think, of the OPARC and the Planning Committee. Bring back as many details as we can. It looks like that November 16th date is going to slide. I don't think that means that the event needs to go away, but I do think the potential date needs to be rediscussed and looked at a different time so that we can still, since the board did approve to go for the grant, we'll bring this item back and seek a future date.
You said the board did approve going for the grant?
Two meetings ago, we did.
The
board approved applying for the grant, but needed details sufficient such that the board majority could support the submission of that grant. And since we were not able to get that tonight, I recommend we bring this back and continue the work, pick a new date, and see if we can make it happen in the future.
Well, an alternative is to call a special meeting when, you know, Aline returns and see if we have support to move forward. So that's an option as well. So we will definitely continue this to the next meeting. So moving on to item 10, hearing items. We do not have any hearing. We don't have any written communications, future agenda items. And I'd like to just team up with you on this one, Director Austin, and get your input on it. At VACO last night, was VACO?
Yeah. Yes.
There was a great discussion about reinvigorating the community cleanup kinds of options that we have, the adopt an alley and all of that. And I know that we have some things coming up with the our garbage contract, or that's also in the air. And that sense, what Vaco's doing connects with our adopt an alley, adopt a street, I can't remember all of the things, that would it be useful for us to agendize that, to talk about how we can kind of better coordinate and kind of pull the whole thing together?
I'm glad you brought that up, because last night at the Vaco meeting, I was presented a proposal that I informed all our members. You know, I've been driving around town a lot lately and noticing that there was pockets of town that needed good little, like small little cleanup. Mm. And, you know, mentioned that we had done big cleanups before. And in my conversation, I was just giving ideas of what we could do. And I said, you can call OCSD because they will get a roll-off for you, which you have done, or your group has done three times where you've had little cleanups and you've gotten a roll-off. So that's what I said. I said, we can do this and that. We talked, asked Tony. And so then I, you made this big thing that I was giving staff direction to participate in a cleanup and going over my bounds and everything. So I'm not interested in talking about anything. We're going to go on with our cleanup. The board, you said I didn't have board permission, but you didn't even take the time to find out what that's all about, which I think it was, I did some checking. It was in 2017, the board decided to furnish a roll-off, they call up and get a roll-off for community groups or people. And as a resident, I called, that my right of everyone else, and just said, hey, do you guys still do the roll-off thing? That was it. But then you send a big email that, you were all upset that I was overstepping my bounds, and I did not do anything of the sort. Just so now you want to turn it into where let's go do this. Well, maybe we will, but I don't want to discuss it right now.
Well, I'm sorry.
Funny.
That.
Yeah, you're always sorry. You always do that. You
could,
attack.
I'd like
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, you attack before you know what's going on. And I'm glad you brought it up.
I'm sorry you perceive that as an attack.
Yeah,
it was. I was not aware of the program, and and Mr. Brown educated me about it, and so that's where I'm looking to see how we can leverage and support one another in it. Sorry that you took offense at it. There was none intended. Simply that there is a sensitivity on the part of directors about OPARC taking up time, staff time, and when I heard that you announced that OCSD was going to be doing something, I knew that we had not talked about it, and so simply as a point of information, I said I think that we would need to agendize this. It was not intended as an attack on you personally or an attack on VACO.
So, President Varney, if I may, I believe the item before the board right now is future agenda items, and the best practice there is simply to suggest to your colleagues or to the general manager ideas for future items. What I don't want to do is get into a detailed discussion about these types of things.
I apologize for that.
Yeah. So are there any items that is on the board's mind that they'd like staff to consider to bring back at a future meeting?
Seeing none, meeting's adjourned.
Tony, can we get a